Time to play the game.
It may be the nighttime,
but the sports talk doesn't stop.
Sports talk radio that's live, local,
and not for the faint of heart.
Oh, you didn't know?
Sometimes angry.
Loud noises!
Telling it like it is.
You insulted him a little bit. You got a little out of order yourself.
And pretty much always right.
Don't ever argue with the big dog. Big dog is always right.
Text or call 404-741-0929 and be part of the show.
Well, we're waiting.
Live from the Kia Studios, it's time for the John Chuckery Show. Serving you up sports on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
And welcome into Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Yes, it is time for the John Chuckery Show. Well, listen, sometimes technology in life just doesn't want to cooperate quite with you, so we're working on a few kinks and a few bugs here to get this thing cranked up and going for you here. On a Monday evening, we'll be with you here till 11 o'clock, so we've got you for the full four this evening. We are asking you to download the Radio.com app because we know you're not in your car as much as what you used to be, but you want to listen to the radio station and this particular show. How do you do it? Radio.com app. That's the easiest way to go about it. Put that on one of your devices today, right? I'm sitting here. I think I've got mine on my tablet or my smartphone or my speakers or, you know, my Lite-Brite or Commodore 64 or maybe my Texas Instruments calculator. I don't know what your device is. Just download it onto something today to catch us on the go. Social media, find us at 929 The Game. As always, the best way to be a part of the show is through our personal Twitter handles. You can hit me up at JMCH316, at JMCH316. Of course, your water cooler talking points 3 to 6 months in advance of anybody else that is out there. He's back in Midtown. He's got it figured out. He's got us on air. Jarvis is in the building at JarvisD90. Lots to get into with you here this evening. Again, we apologize for some of the connection issues and maybe the quality of the sound that is coming through, but we will plow along and do the best that we can here and try to figure all of this out. Hawks last night, much needed victory over the Nuggets. Of course, they, you know, it's been kind of a struggle here of late for the Atlanta Hawks, who are 2-8 in their last 10 coming in. Find a way to get it done. Once again, though, same old story. It's get behind early, be down in the first quarter, and then have to rally and try to come back and find a way to pull out the victory. But that was a good victory. Of course, last night, Lord Pierce was out again because of actually COVID protocol. So Hawks interim head coach, Nate McMillan, now 2-1 after a good win against the Nuggets, a good Western Conference team. So now you've got a couple of games coming up here between tomorrow and Wednesday. So night off tonight. So Cavs tomorrow night, all the action right here on 92.9 The Game, and then back with the Celtics on Wednesday. So at Cleveland tomorrow, home with the Celtics on Wednesday. Of course, we've got the MLK jersey celebration and all that. So a lot going on Wednesday night, but certainly two games that, you know, after getting some things fixed last night, can the Hawks find a way to get a couple of victories this week? This would be two good victories to get. You know, the Cavaliers are kind of right behind the Atlanta Hawks right now, the way the Eastern Conference sets itself up. But obviously the Celtics, who the Hawks have seen a couple of times last week already, they're sitting in the fourth seed for the Eastern Conference. So certainly a chance to try to make up a little bit of ground in the East with a couple of teams coming up this week. So coming up at 7:40, we'll talk to Brad Rowland from Peachtree Hoops. Talk to him about this Atlanta Hawks team and kind of where we're at. And you know, don't forget, just a handful of games before we get into the All-Star break. So first half of the season is coming to a close very, very quickly here. Of course, you know, is everybody going to still tell me that we're early yet? Once we get to halfway, am I still going to hear that it's early and things like that? Or can we go ahead and start saying, yeah, it's not really early anymore? If you have fewer games remaining to play than you've already played, I'm not sure I can hear that that's early, but, you know, seems like until somebody's 90% of the way through their schedule, then you know, it's not early anymore. But anyway, we'll talk to Brad coming up at 7:40. Braves continue rolling along down in Florida, spring training, as we will start to get into some actual interleague, or not interleague, some spring training games coming up this weekend. So Braves getting ready to go and time to actually get into a little bit of competition. Gabe Burns, our buddy from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, He's set to join us at 8:20 as we get ready for Grapefruit League action to start up this weekend. So baseball is officially back. You know, pitchers and catchers have reported. Guys, positional players are down in spring training, so everything is getting going. So Grapefruit League action will start up this weekend. So we'll talk to Gabe about where we're kind of at with this Atlanta Braves team. A couple of the things to get into with you here this evening. Of course, speaking of the Braves, I want to say congratulations to Freddie and Chelsea Freeman on their twin boys. So Freddie is a now father. I think he has five. Three kids. I apologize. It's a family of five. They have three kids now. So congratulations to Freddie and his wife Chelsea. Freddie's going to miss a little bit of time here. I think he's going to be might even be out of action this weekend. They said he'll be back here soon, but obviously he's going to miss a little bit of time with the birth of his twins. So congratulations to them. Sound like everything went well, so there you go. Couple other things. Today is the birthday of one of my absolute favorite NBA players of all time. Growing up as a kid, my two favorites, without question, were Magic Johnson and Dr. J, Julius Erving, and it's Julius Erving's birthday. In fact, I don't know if he still lives in it. I think his daughter at one time, right? And I always remember these little bits and pieces, right? I think his daughter or something lived in Atlanta, and he was here regularly, or Julius himself lived in Atlanta for a while, because I know people have talked about running into him at the Palm restaurant, and I can't remember if he actually lived here in Atlanta for a while, or it was something like his daughter lived here, and he was here pretty regularly or something like that, but I could tell you, like I said, he along with Magic Johnson, Julius Erving was one of my absolute favorites growing up. Dr. J, you know, you talk about one of the high flyers in the NBA before that really became a thing with Michael and everybody else. But, you know, you watch the highlights of him in the ABA where he was really, I think, the more dominant player. You know, by the time he got to 76ers, he played a bunch of years in the ABA and in the league and things like that. Of course, I got the one time I got to see him live was part of that 83 76ers championship team with him and Moses and Mo Cheeks and Andrew Toney and all those guys. I got a chance to see them up at the Richfield Coliseum taking on the Cleveland Cavaliers. That's old school. If you know about the Richfield Coliseum, one of the most, you know, awful buildings to get in and out of in the NBA. Just a dreadful place to have an NBA stadium. And it got at the end of its run, it got so bad that they wanted to make it like a homeless shelter, and there were so many rats and everything in the building that they couldn't even use it for anything. That's how bad the Richfield Coliseum was. But that's not even in Cleveland. That's about halfway between Akron and Cleveland is where Richfield is, right in the middle of the snow belt. One way in, one way out, and when it snowed, it just got hammered there. And I remember seeing a couple of Cavs games up there in my life and getting stuck in snowstorms, or it took like hours to get home because you're right in the worst part of the weather. But I remember watching the 76ers, you know, in that game. It was kind of like, you know, as a kid, I guess I'd have been about 11 or 12 years old at the time. Just unbelievable to get to see one of my favorite players in Dr. J. So wasn't quite the same player at that point, you know, like I said, as he was in the ABA, but still one of the greatest of all time. So happy birthday to Dr. J, Julius Erving. And quickly, too, 41 years ago today, what I will argue is the greatest moment in Olympic history for the U.S. team is the miracle on ice where the U.S. hockey team up in Lake Placid, New York, beat what was literally considered maybe the greatest hockey team of all time in the Russian national team. A lot of people tell you that they were as good, if not better, than a lot of the NHL teams in the league at that time. So, you know, the U.S. men's hockey team, obviously one of the great underdog stories of all time. You know, that wasn't the gold medal match either. There's a lot of things that people sort of, for lack of a better word, misremember about that. Number one, it wasn't the gold medal game. Number two, it wasn't on live TV. So when people say, oh, yeah, I remember seeing that live, you know, when it happened, well, they're lying to you, because it was actually a tape delay. And I think, if I remember right, it wasn't until later in the evening when they played a lot of that stuff. It was, you know, it wasn't like, you know, middle of the afternoon or whatever. If I remember right, I think it was later in the evening before people got a chance to see the game. But obviously by then, word had spread. And, of course, Al Michaels on the great call, do you believe in miracles? Yes. just an unbelievable story to find a way. And then the U.S. with, I think it was Finland that they played in the gold medal game to win the gold medal that year. But what an unbelievable story. What an unbelievable victory. 41 years ago today for one of the, one of the great moments in sports of all time. But I would tell you, without a doubt, for U.S. Olympic competition, it's the greatest moment of all time. Just an unbelievable story, and they've made movies and documentaries, and those guys made a lot of money. You know, Jim Craig played for the Flames here in Atlanta for a little bit. You know, none of those guys really went on to any kind of superstardom in the NHL, but they certainly made a lot of money. You know, Mike Ruzzaroni, I think is how you pronounce it, who made, obviously tons of cash going on speaking tours and things like that for, a long, long time. So those guys did well for themselves. There was always a high demand for those guys because it was such an unbelievable story. If you read the story about how good that Russian hockey team was, they were all but professional hockey players. I mean, they were every bit of what a professional was. I mean, by today's standards, there's no doubt that they would be considered professionals in their sport. So 41 years ago today, the miracle on ice. All right, when we get back, what are the three biggest questions for the Atlanta Braves going into this 2021 season? We'll talk about that next. Chuck, we're hanging out with you here on Sports Radio Nights on the Game and on your radio.com app. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. John Chuckery Show. Fighting some technology issues here, so we are live with you here. I don't know what we got going on at this point. I'm just talking into a microphone, and we'll try to figure it out as we go together down this rabbit hole of technology. So anyway, 404-741-0929, Solomon Brothers Diamond text line to be a part of the radio show. Radio.com app, say catch us on the go. Social media at 929. Follow me at JamesCH316. He's at JarvisD90. Not sure if we're going to get a chance to talk with Brad Rowland or not, but we have him scheduled. We will see. Obviously, we're fighting some issues here, so apologize and ask you to just hang in with us. We'll get something figured out one way or the other here very shortly. Very quickly, as we only have a few minutes left here. So, Atlanta Braves, to get cranked up. We'll talk to Gabe Burns coming up at 8:20. Three biggest questions for the Atlanta Braves going into this 2021 season. Now, the good news is when you have a team that was only six outs away from being in the World Series last year, then you shouldn't have really that many questions, right? Assuming that you didn't have a bunch of guys retire or get traded or lose a whole bunch of people. You know, this is not the Marlins after the 97 World Series, and then they decided to just ditch the roster at that point. This is obviously a team that is on the ascent and hasn't even begun to peak yet. Ideally, hasn't begun to peak yet. So my three biggest questions for the Atlanta Braves getting into this season. Number one is, how much has the NL East caught up to the Atlanta Braves? We know the Mets went out and were trying to load up this year. You know, they didn't get Trevor Bauer, but they certainly found a way after losing Robinson Cano to PED suspension for the entire year. They made a trade to bring in the best shortstop in baseball, a very underrated starting pitcher. Maybe next to JT Realmuto, the next best free agent offseason catcher that was available. So Mets have certainly loaded up. The Nationals, I thought, did a lot of sneaky good moves in the offseason to try to better themselves with Josh Bell, with John Lester. You know, maybe not the big home run splash, although I'll tell you, if Josh Bell can be what he was a couple of years ago, you know, he's a potential 25 to 35 homer, 115 RBI first baseman, left-handed power that you just put right in the middle of your lineup. So I think that they did some sneaky good moves. Philadelphia, obviously, with bringing Realmuto back, still has the talent, but does it come together? That's been the question is, okay, they loaded up with all these guys and nothing worked for them, so what do they do from here? So how much is the NL East caught up to them? Number two for me, what do we get from the two new starting pitchers at the back end of the rotation, Charlie Morton and Drew Smyly? Now, Charlie Morton is a guy who, you know, it was an up-and-down year last year. Again, it's hard to kind of put any definitives on a year where you only had 37% of the season that was played. But if Charlie Morton can get back to what he was in 2019, Braves have a really effective starter, whether he's going to be their number three or number four guy out there. But certainly Charlie Morton is a guy that if he can get back to form, you're talking about a guy who's, you know, a near 200 strikeout type of pitcher. Now, I don't know if he's that same guy anymore. Maybe he's lost a little bit. I don't know. But certainly if he can find some form, Drew Smyly is an analytics dream, but what does he give you in reality? So finding something on the back end. And then finally, can Ozuna and Darnell repeat some of the magic from last year? Now, what happens if those guys aren't healthy or aren't as productive? What if they really come back to a norm or a mean, or they have a disappointing season? Now, I've said, Ozuna put up Lou Gehrig-like numbers if you extrapolate them over 162 games. 49 homers, 150-something RBIs if you pull them over the whole year in 162 games. Is that realistic? Probably not. And I don't think it needs to be. But, you know, even if he's 32 and 100, you know, 5 or 110 RBI, then look, you take that all day long out of your cleanup hitter, right? You take that all day long with him. So he doesn't have to be that kind of guy, but he still has to be a real presence in the order to where you can't afford to pitch around Freddie Freeman because you've got one or two guys. You can't really have both of them drop off. I expect that one of those guys, you know, may come back a little bit more to the norm. Now, is Travis Darnell a 317 hitter? Probably not. But can he be 270 and be a guy with 20-plus homers at the five spot? Yeah, I think so. Can Ozuna be a guy that's, you know, 30 homers and 100 RBI? Yeah, if he can stay healthy. And that will be the two big questions for those guys. Because the 2 years with St. Louis were okay, but they were nothing special. When you have a guy that's missing between 25 and 30 games, that's a lot to have to make up out of a top guy that you're sticking right in the middle of your order. So you got a guy that misses 25, 30 games in the heart of your order, that's tough. You're not gonna replace the production, you know, at that point from those guys. So what can those guys be? Outside of that, I mean, there isn't much to have to try to come up with for this team. So hit us up on the text line. Hit us up on our Twitter page with your questions. Coming up next, we are trying to see if we can effort Brad Rowland, trying to work out a few bugs here with our system. So hopefully we'll get a chance to talk with him next. If not, I'll be back and we'll talk a little bit of Hawks. It is John Chuckery hanging out with you here on this Monday evening on Sports Radio 910 The Game and on your radio.com app. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, back with you on the John Chuckery Show, hanging out with you on this Monday evening, 404-741-0929. Solomon Bros. Diamond text line to be a part of the show. Radio.com app site, catch us on the go. Social media at 929 The Game. Hit us up at JMSH316. He's at JarvisD90. We apologize, we're having some technical difficulties here on the show tonight, so hopefully we get some of these fixed and ready to go, so we will do our best here to be with you here. Just bear with us here. It may not always sound perfect, but we'll try to figure things out as we go. You know how we do it around here. I mean, our show's on the fly anyway. So Hawks last night, get it done against the Denver Nuggets now tomorrow and Wednesday. Back-to-back Cavs and Celtics. A couple of important games as we're getting toward the end of the first half of the season. Still waiting for the schedule release of what the second half is going to look like. Let's head out to the WadeFord.com hotline, Atlanta's Ford dealer. Let's talk to Brad Rowland. Of course, he writes for Peachtree Hoops. You can follow Brad on Twitter at BT Rowland. Brad, as always, I appreciate it, man. Thanks for spending a few minutes with us here this evening.
It is my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So, you know, last night, Brad, even though it was a victory, it's still that blueprint for the Hawks. And we had Travis Schlenk, who's on our morning show weekly, talked about this last week. It seems like still for the last couple of years, even this year, it's still that same blueprint. They get down in the first quarter, they're behind after one, and then have to kind of rally. What do you make of that? Why has this become such a consistent pattern for this team that these first quarters have just been so tough for them to get through and you know, come out fast and get any kind of lead?
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm not sure if it's just being a young team and kind of figuring out – what they have to do to start games better and come out with that intensity that you have to match throughout the game, because they usually adjust fairly well. But from there, like you just can't, like you said, you just can't afford to be down as regularly as they have been at times during this regime. So I'm not sure if there's like a perfect answer, but it's a situation where, you know, being a young team growing 50 so far, I think the first quarter numbers haven't been quite as ugly this year as they have been in previous years. It's more anecdotal, but they're still, I think, like -5 in terms of their net rating in the first quarter, which is going to get you beat sometimes if you get down too much.
Brad, defensively, you know, as they've had this rough patch, you know, before last night, you know, we were talking about, you know, some of the numbers they'd given up, you know, it was 118, 125, 125, 120. You know, you're not going to beat many teams in the NBA giving up 120 a night. And, you know, the other night against the Knicks, it was, you know, they gave up 20 more points to the Knicks than what they've been averaging all season. How much is still trying to figure out the rotation because of injuries? How much is DeAndre Hunter missed, you know, causing their defense to be this way? But certainly defensively, at least for these last couple of weeks and really all year, it's just not been where this team needs to be if they want to be any kind of playoff threat.
Yeah, I think it's all those things. They actually started out pretty hot defensively, and they were kind of getting a little bit lucky with some opponent shooting, teams missing some shots that they normally would make. And then they lost Hunter, as you point out. And Hunter is not like an absolutely elite defensive player right now in his career, but he is the only guy on the Hawks roster that does what he does. He is a big physical wing who is also pretty athletic and plays, you know, 35 minutes a game. If you like take that guy off the floor, it really hurts your defense. So it's a little bit about the depth not being there and all the injuries they've had. It's a little bit about just regression from early in the season. And it's the fact that, you know, even coming into the year, this team's personnel is still offense-leaning. They are better defensively this year, even with the downturn recently. They're still better defensively than they've been the last couple of years. But when you have Trae Young, when you have some of these young guys on the perimeter, they are going to have defensive issues sometimes. Capella helps a lot of that stuff, but for the most part, this is still an offense-first team. And, you know, while Hunter is, when he comes back, he's definitely going to help things, they have to kind of just be average defensively. Anything better than that's gravy.
Brad Rowland joining us here on the WaitForIt.com hotline. Of course, writes for Peachtree Hoops as we talk some Atlanta Hawks back in action tomorrow and Wednesday. Cavs tomorrow, Celtics on Wednesday, back home on Wednesday as well. You know, Clint Capella, I think, has been everything we could have asked for. You know, a little bit of injury, a little bit of a slow start, but, you know, leading the league in rebounds. I mean, has he really been more of a bright spot than we could have even kind of imagined, having not seen him last year? I mean, he's got to be everything and more that they could have hoped for.
Yeah, I think that's definitely correct, especially defensively. Like, Capella is, like you said, leading the league in rebounds and blocking a lot of shots and being the team's anchor. And we kind of knew that was going to be the case if he was healthy. He was going to sort of be that backline defender that they haven't had in quite some time. But the fact that he, after missing the first two games of the season, has been healthy for most of the way, that's been huge, because they just cannot afford to be without him, honestly. Other than Trae Young, he's probably the most indispensable piece, because they just don't have anybody behind them that's quite ready to go yet. And defensively, he's the only guy back there that's really going to be able to clean up as a backline center kind of defender. Offensively, he's actually been a little bit more shaky at times. I know it kind of feels strange to say that, where the guy shoots 60% from the floor, but he's actually not been quite as good as he was in Houston offensively, just finishing around the rim. But he's been better lately. He's rounding into form. And to your point, I think he has been, if anything, much better than you could have expected after the long break and the injury and all that.
Brad, what do we make of Cam Reddish? I mean, we've had some of the other writers on locally, and just, it's so inconsistent offensively. You know, it's 18 one night and 6 the next, and 14 and 7. Just, you know, it doesn't seem like he can get any kind of consistency on his shot to fall. Is it just youth, or, I mean, is there just, you know, is this going to kind of be what he is? I mean, you know, offensively, his game just hasn't seemed to caught up at times this year.
Yeah, I think, you know, part of it is the fact that I think he was a little bit overrated by some offensively as a prospect. He is still very young. He's 21. So I think he'll be better than this. But to your point, he's just been very inefficient for the most part. Over about a month last season near the end of the campaign, he's just not been a productive offensive player. He has the flashes, and when it looks good, it looks great. Like, he looks really smooth. He has a couple of off-the-dribble moves. He'll be able to shoot the ball from distance and take guys off the dribble. But the overall package, the numbers are pretty ugly, honestly. And it's one of those things where if you catch him on the right night, you might look better than that. But it's the simple things. Like, he's going to have to shoot better than he has on the perimeter. For instance, this season, he's shooting 26% from three. And that's a number that you just can't get away with. Even with his good defense, and I will be the first to say that he is a good defender, and that helps a lot with his baseline being a little bit higher, because being a good wing defender is so valuable in the NBA. But there's a certain baseline offensively that you have to hit to play big minutes. And right now, Cam is not really hitting it. He's still playing a lot anyway because he is so young, he is talented, he is a former lottery pick, and by the way, the Hawks are so shorthanded that he has to play. But if they have everybody around and he's playing this poorly, he almost has to lose playing time. It's been that kind of bad on the offensive end of the floor. So I'm not panicking. It's still very early. He's had these two very choppy seasons with the injuries that he's had, and also COVID, obviously the COVID shutdown and all that. But he's going to have to improve offensively to reach where he's supposed to be. And I still believe in that. But I think right now it's definitely defense first, and you're just hoping for enough offense.
Brad Rowland from Peachtree Hoops joining us here on the WadeFord.com hotline, talking some Hawks as we get ready for Hawks-Cavs tomorrow. Hawks-Celtics coming up on Wednesday. All your action right here on Sports Radio 92.9, The Game. Brad, does it make sense to be a buyer at the deadline as we're about a month away? Or do you think the mindset is, okay, Bogdanovich in some ways is like adding a free agent because we've barely seen, you know, any of them. Getting Gallinari back to, you know, regular minutes. Obviously, if they can get Rondo back regularly, eventually DeAndre Hunter. Do you think it makes sense that they should be looking at adding a piece, or is it just staying with the roster and just really hoping for health more than anything?
I think it's more of the latter of just getting guys back. If you look at the roster, if everybody's healthy, you know, coming into the year, everyone's talking about how the Hawks might have had too many guys, which is hilarious now in retrospect because they've been so banged up. But they have, you know, depth was supposed to be a strength of this team, and they don't really have a very obvious place to upgrade if everybody's around. Now, injuries are a part of the game, but they've been really hit on the perimeter so much so far that just getting their guys back, you know, Bogdanovich is the guy that you mentioned, throw him in, throw Hunter in. Those two guys are better than anyone that they're probably going to be able to trade for in terms of the next month or so. The Hawks are still set up pretty well if they want to do one of those big-time like superstar trades. But right now, that guy probably isn't available. So I think all things equal, the most likely thing to do for now is just hope you get better with internal development and just getting your guys healthy. Because, again, they've been basically operating without two of their best wings now for several weeks, and Bogdanovich even longer than that. So those guys coming back is pretty much the same thing as getting in that position, especially when you throw in Capella compared to last year. So staying the course is the way to go. I would imagine it's because of where they are right now, but it's going to have to require those guys coming back and playing well.
Last thing, Brad, I'm going to talk about this coming up at the top of the hour, but, you know, obviously John Collins is the guy whose name, you know, is a fun, popular name for all of the websites to talk about potential trades and stuff like that, as he's going to be an unrestricted free agent. But, you know, to me, it seems like, you know, if we've talked about kind of playoffs or busts for this franchise, and they're not far out, you know, when you look at the East, as far as, you know, you pick up two or three games in the East, you can go from being, you know, 11 to 5, you know, I mean, it's that tight. To me, it feels like unless the Hawks can get something kind of lopsided in their favor on a trade, I can't imagine the idea that they're going to move John Collins at least before the deadline or at least this, you know, regular season.
Yeah, I agree with you in general. You know, part of that is where they are, like you said, they're trying to make the playoffs. And it's really hard to find a deal for John Collins that makes you better in season. That's the simplest way to put it, is if you're trading him, it's probably going to be with a future face to it, which I understand. And it would basically require Travis Schlenk and company to decide kind of flat out that they do not want to pay him this summer. I get that calculus, but to your point, like, you can't make the team better most likely unless it's a superstar trade that's not really out there. And Collins makes pretty little amount right now. You only make about $4 million. You have to match salary in a trade. It just becomes very difficult logistically to trade him unless you really, really want to. So sitting back, taking offers, if someone blows you away, like you said, then yeah, you have to consider it. But I'll be surprised. I won't be shocked, but I would be absolutely surprised if they end up trading him just because of all the logistics in play. And then you have a big decision to come this summer, obviously, with John. But for now, he's still, you know, one of your three or four best players and a guy who is pretty cheap and brings energy and plays well for you. And when you're trying to win, as the Hawks obviously are this year, he's a big part of that, obviously.
Check him out on Twitter, at BT Rowland. Of course, writes for Peachtree Hoops, covers all things Atlanta Hawks, and join us here on the WadeFord.com hotline. Brad, as always, buddy, appreciate it. Thanks for spending a few minutes with us. Be good, and enjoy the next couple of nights.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
You got it. When we get back from the top of the hour, as I mentioned, unless the deal is lopsided in the Hawks' favor, does it make any sense to even think about trying to trade John Collins? There's all kinds of deals that get rumored and floated out there. So we'll talk about all.